Hello and welcome to Join the Docs, our weekly peek under the medical bedsheets. Today we're not alone in bed, we're joined by bedbugs. These pesky creatures have been known to bother humans for 2,500 years, longer even than Dr. Nigel Guest has been bothering me. We are going to discuss the lives of these brutes, how utterly unpleasant it is if you get bitten, and how to treat the consequences of allowing bedbugs to bite. Given that they dine on your blood and may have dined on someone else who has an infectious disease, just like mosquitoes transmitting malaria, do you know what your risks are? We will tell you. Importantly, we'll explain how to avoid meeting bedbugs and how to prevent them coming back to your home. So don't sleep tight just yet, but continue listening at Join the Docs. So on the menu today, Nigel, some good advice. Sleep tight and don't let the bedbugs bite.
It's 9 a.m., John. Rough night?
Well, actually, it's an interesting expression that people use. And as you know, I like the derivation.
Oh, Jesus.
I know it'll come as a surprise. But
no.
So I looked into it, Nigel. It comes from in days of old, right? A bed was...
Days of old? When were they? Give me a rough estimate.
About 2 weeks ago.
All right, Tuesday. Okay.
A bed was basically a rectangular wooden frame, and you would have ropes tied backwards and forwards and lengthways, and that was basically the springiness of that. So if the ropes, if you were lying, if someone of your considerable mass, shall we say, were to lie on the bed.
When you say we.
If you were to lie on the bed, you would basically stretch the ropes and the ropes would become
at best
loose, right? Pay focus here. Right. The ropes would become loose and they would sag and it wouldn't be comfortable. So sleep tight means the ropes were tight, okay?
Well, you learn something every day. That's brilliant.
There you go.
So, please tell me another fact.
Okay, so on top of the rope springs, if will, people would put a mattress, and it was something like a Hessian sack full of straw. And in that straw, bedbugs would breed, and people would say, sleep tight and don't let the bedbugs bite. So the tight was about the ropes. They didn't want bedbugs biting you because bed bug bites are hideous, as we're going to learn. Hotels these days are packed post-COVID. People are traveling again. And bed bugs are once again an escalating problem. Yeah. There are bed bugs in Paris. There are bed bugs in New York. Bed bugs in Las Vegas. Bed bugs in mattresses, on mattresses, everywhere.
Well, it's funny you say that, and actually that sounds like you're going to sort of construct a song from that. But anyway, I've had some sort of, well, not personal, but displaced personal experience through my niece, who lives near London. But she'd been travelling and came back to her mother's house, my sister, and managed to bring some bed bugs with her. And my sister was really pleased about this, and my niece was even more pleased because she transferred this to my sister, not her own house. They took for ages to get rid of them. I know you're going to talk a little bit about that, but it's a real, real problem. And it's changed the way that they behave now. But we can talk about that in a moment.
Well, as your faithful doctor correspondent, I like to try and have sympathy and have empathy as well. I was in New York a few years back, and I was doing a guest lecture thing, and they put me up in a really beautiful top hotel. Not going to mention the name, but it was a 5-star hotel. And I woke up, and I didn't know anything about bed bugs at the time. I woke up in the morning and was itchy. And I looked at my legs, my arms, my stomach, and everywhere I looked, there were these lines of red bites. And I have to tell you, it was absolutely brutal. I looked, because me in dermatology.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You realize that void needed filling.
Massive void. So I went online and thought, holy crap, I've been bitten by bed bugs. And
the alliteration that we're going to.
Yeah, I know. But I discovered that indeed there were bed bugs, and I reported it to the management, who were, shall we say, a little bit less than sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
But I called the New York authorities, and the place was actually, they had to shut the hotel down.
Oh, good grief. You'll be popular.
They're everywhere, right?
Yeah.
So bed bug bites
I think what we'll do is we'll put some photographs on the website and links to them on social media. Bedbug bites, bedbug rashes, photos will help you identify it so you know a little bit about it. And then everything we talk about will stick in the show notes. So I think that will be helpful. But we're going to dig into it in some detail.
Okay, so now you're a whiz on bedbugs and the various alliterative descriptions of them. Go on, tell us a bit more. You're bound to have looked into the flipping history.
Well, first of all, what are they? So joining us on the show today is our resident skeleton.
Hi, Slim.
And he's clearly trying to have a nap. For those of you just listening in, he's in repose on a pillow. He's got eye shades on and there are nasty little plastic bugs all over him. Those are not what bedbugs look like. Bedbugs are tiny, parasitic. They're called obligatory hematophagous, which means they live on eating blood. They're flightless. The Latin name is Simicidae, and they feed on warm mammalian blood, like mine.
Well, you
like
should have been okay. You're a surgeon, aren't you? Cold-blooded.
They don't do reservations. They don't have any table manners. And
then they do like to stay in five-star hotels, really.
They do like to stay. Well, they've got taste.
Classy, yeah.
So they were first described, interestingly, in 400 BC, 2,500 years ago. So they were a bad memory until the 1990s. And yeah.
Surely to God, they haven't got more to worry about in 400 BC. They couldn't have sort of, in the culture, our biggest problem is
bedbugs.
How about inventing something like, I don't know what they're inventing in 400 BC? The wheel?
Well, we'll come on to what has been invented. That
That's what you
to
get around. Anyway, isn't it? If you got bitten, you get a wheel.
Different kind. That's
dermatology
joke.
That's
dermatology talk, which I don't do. So there's been a massive recurrence since the 1990s. And again, post-COVID, they're once again a huge problem.
Why?
I'm very pleased you asked that. So where do they come from? Well, with increased travel, if you've got people mobile, it's kind of like with the pandemic. Someone sneezes in London, someone in San Francisco catches a cold, right?
Yeah.
As people travel, it's very easy for someone who is carrying bedbugs on their person to go in three or four different hotels, and those rooms are occupied by other people. They're spread very, very rapidly.
Well, it's exponential, isn't it, almost?
It truly is. Yeah. It's exponential growth. But there's another really interesting element to this, which is pesticide resistance. So there's a chemical called, I'm going to have to read this because I can't remember it. It's dichlorodiphenyltrichloroethane, better known as DDT. Which was an agricultural pesticide, and it was banned in America in 1972, still used in some places. And basically what happened is bedbugs became resistant to it. And as you're going to learn, they are pesky little characters.
Mm.
Additionally, there is the social habit that people have of recycling, right, which is largely a good thing. However, if people have infested soft furnishings, and they sell them at a car boot sale here in the United Kingdom, or in America, they call them yard sales, you're basically transferring the bedbugs from one household to another household.
I'm just intrigued by that, because, I mean, whilst they're rife and that's happening, they're not that rife, are they? I mean, yes, we've got examples, and I guess people are getting them when they're traveling, but, I mean, they haven't quite got to the domestic part of the example I gave, the domestic scene yet, have they, for want of a better phrase or saying?
Well, people are talking about them being on the London Underground.
Yeah.
On buses, like, say, in hotels and such like. You know, a while back, I was staying in a hotel, and a film crew turned up, and they were checking into the hotel. And I got
Was that because you were there, was it?
Because I was there, they'd heard, clearly. And I got chatting to a couple of them in the bar and said, what are you filming? They said, it's Fast and Furious 10.
10.
And it's like, you know, it's a movie about people driving cars very fast.
Be fast and a bit pissed off by them, wouldn't you? Be a bit bored by all.
Fast and vaguely aggravated. Fairly quick. Moderately quick and fairly agitated. And I was thinking, how do you keep telling the same story? So they are back with a vengeance, and it's difficult to obliterate. And that's why, it's growing, and people need to be aware about it. So let's sort of educate people about that. What do bed bugs look like? They're oval, right? They're nocturnal. They come out at night. They live in mattresses and soft furnishings. When they're young, They're small and transparent, and when they're mature adults, they're brown, about a quarter an inch or half a centimeter long, and about half that across, about the size of an apple seed, or a little bit smaller.
So you said mature males. What do the mature females look like?
I said adults, not right, males.
Sorry. I wasn't concentrating.
You wouldn't know what an adult is,
Nigel. I've seen them. I've seen them about.
You aspire to it.
I do.
And the bed bugs are actually, they live like, by the edge of the bed, there's that rope-like seam that goes around.
Yeah.
Actually, I wonder if that's a throwback to the old-fashioned mattresses I was explaining with ropes. But anyway, there's that rope-like seam around the mattress. And if you just sort of pull it back, that's where you'll see them sort of under that. They're dormant until you get into bed.
Bit like you then, really, isn't it, yeah?
So focus, Dr. Guest, no. So basically what happens is there's a chemical stimulus, and one will signal to the others, hey guys, there's fresh meat here.
But this finally, are they smelling you, or are they getting warmth, or are they, or empathy, or
a bit of love,
irritation, or they're sort of medium much, speed and furious, and they're getting in there, or are they just hungry?
They're hungry, right. And they are nocturnal, and of course that's when people go to bed. And if attacked, you'll wake up with these red, itchy spots and welts, and frankly, it gives new meaning to the word itchy. So let's talk a little bit about, well, first of all, I should mention that I've said you can find them in the seam. So when you go into a hotel, one of the first things you should do, actually, there's things you should do before that, but when you come into the hotel, you should put your luggage down
Hard on
something
surface.
Wooden, a hard surface, peel back the sheet and have a look at that seam. Look for the bugs themselves, look for blood spots on the mattress or dead bugs. Also look around pipes coming into the room because they like crawling along pipes and such like. But let's assume that you've woken up and you're hideously itchy.
Yeah.
What are bed bugs? How do you treat bed bugs?
Well, I guess you're treating the symptoms, aren't you? I mean,
you are, absolutely. And the symptoms are itchiness, so use antipruritic or anti-itch creams, and sometimes steroid creams, and sometimes oral steroids. I actually needed to take an oral steroid pack for a period of time, and I'd like you to explain that. And sometimes antihistamines can be used. So, Nigel, you've got much more experience providing than I do.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, the simplest way, certainly in the UK, is to get antihistamines over the counter from a pharmacy. Simple antihistamines will often help with itching. I guess the issue is dosing, and if that doesn't work, then you probably need to have higher doses or different antihistamines, and then you probably would need the assistance of, not necessarily a general practitioner, but a specialised nurse, and getting some more advice. And as you say, then on top of that, putting steroid creams on, and everybody worries about using steroid creams, but low-dose steroid creams are very effective against itching, and that can be escalated. People buy antihistamine creams, they don't really work. So I think that's, you're much better off having something that's got...
But what about oral steroids?
Oh, well, oral steroids would be excessive in most cases, but if the itching is that bad, a short, sharp course of oral steroids... 5 days is what we usually be, but a reasonably high dose. People worry about that, but a short, sharp, prescribed course of steroids doesn't do anybody any harm and is incredibly effective.
Well, I have to say, I was traveling back home and I bought some steroid cream and some antipruritic, antihistamine.
The stuff with urine and things like that, which is probably beyond that.
Yeah, well, I went on to a steroid dose pack, and within hours of the first dose, the itching was controlled. And my understanding is the remaining few days are so that you don't shock your body, if you will, and your body can start producing, because when you take steroids, you suppress your body's own ability to make steroids, right?
Yeah. And if you do it for too long, probably in excess of 10 days, then you probably should start tailing them off. But of course, the last 5, 7, even 10 days is fine. Yeah. And it's incredibly, as you say, effective.
But if people scratch a lot, that causes more histamine to be released, which worsens the itching. So it sounds like dreadful advice, but if you've got an itch, don't scratch it, because you'll make it worse, actually.
Absolutely great advice. Easier said than done. But I mean, that's you're absolutely right. It's a itch scratch cycle, and that's why you wear
itch scratch cycle. It's kind of scratch, like an exercise.
Yeah, it's like an electric bike, but it's different. Well, that's why you wear boxing gloves in bed, isn't it?
What
stops you scratching?
Sorry, what? Boxing gloves in bed?
No, yeah, if you've got eczema or if you've got something really itchy.
I see.
You see, I mean, there's another one.
It's just the way you phrased it. You said, that's why you wear boxing gloves in bed.
When
I do not wear boxing gloves
well,
in bed.
You say that, but it's... I should have said one. If one was very itchy, she could wear. I mean, clearly, nobody's going to wear. No, well, that's armless. But it's. But if you wear a boxing glove, where am I going with this? No one wears a boxing glove in bed, do they? Unless they're a boxer. But cotton gloves is another thing. You can actually have those prescribed. But nice little cotton gloves stops you itching. It's great for kids. It's like cotton mittens. It stops itchy babies scratching themselves in the night.
Who knew?
Who knew?
So
itchy babies. Itchy babies.
Itchy babies. Well. Okay.
Sorry, where did we go?
I have no idea. You're completely blowing me apart. But if you do scratch, you can actually get secondary infection, in which case antibiotics sometimes get talked about. And we've got a problem with antibiotic resistance. What are your thoughts about antibiotics for this situation?
I think it's easy to have overkill with that. And often with rashes that look like they're perhaps infected, they're often not. It's just that the excoriation, the scratching and the damage to the skin looks like it might be. And of course, to take antibiotics by mouth has an effect on the whole system and all the knock-on effects in terms of antibiotic resistance and everything like that. But sometimes you can...
And fungal infections.
Everything that goes with antibiotics and all the issues related to that. So yeah, we should all be responsible as prescribers and reduce that as far as possible. But sometimes you need them, and if you need them, you need them. But there's also sometimes topical, you know, in creams that you can use for localized areas and used judiciously. Then that's fine. But you know, you should seek obviously professional advice for that. You shouldn't be going in the back of your cupboard and seeing if you can find two or three antibiotics with some fluff on them. And eat those. That's incredibly responsible.
It's not, well, we can talk one day. We should talk one day about having a responsible approach to old medications. Yeah. But you know, just as an alert, when I've had people say to me, "Oh, it's just antibiotics." Well, you know, as a surgeon, I've sometimes seen people with pseudomembranous colitis. That's a condition where, as you know, you kill off the bugs that you're trying to treat with the antibiotics, and it leads to overgrowth of a very nasty bug inside the large bowel, the colon, and basically. These people, it's a life-threatening condition.
Yeah.
I've operated on this, and the colon turns into wet tissue paper, and literally as you're trying to touch it, it's falling apart in your hands.
And that's difficult to operate on, isn't it?
It's really difficult, and if you can't get to these people quickly and perform, you know, the necessary operation if they need surgery, it's disastrous. Yes, it can be treated other ways, but we'll come on to that because that's going to be an interesting topic one of these days. But allergic reactions to things can amplify the symptoms. And there's also, not only with the antibiotics and the itching, there's a psychological impact about having been infested by bed bugs. It's like
People think it's taboo with being dirty, isn't it? Or I mean, it's all the beds are dirty. I mean, it's just an infestation. And you're right; people perceive it as being their fault, really. It's like when people pick up other skin issues like scabies or all those sort of things that's associated. So yeah, psychological effect in terms of how it has on them, let alone the hassle. But then you sometimes get into cycle with people that once they've had something like that, they start to become effectively paranoid. And I'm sure we'll talk at some other point about threadworms, which is a classic one, which causes anal itching. And I've had patients that have become absolutely paranoid about the fact that they've got them and they're constantly checking and everything like that, where in fact, having had like three courses of treatment, had it explained to them the cycle of threadworms and, you know, how to avoid that, and knowing that they could possibly have them, they still think they have. And it almost becomes obsessive. And so I think we have to be careful, and that's why I was asking before about how common is it truly. I think people need to be aware that they shouldn't be paranoid. They should just be cautious.
It's like most things, you can take sensible steps. And I mean, one of the big paranoias is people, you know, will make a mental leap. So mosquitoes are a massive source of the transmission of human disease. Malaria, for instance. Many diseases are transmitted by biting insects. And although organisms like bacteria, viruses capable of causing human illness have been found in bedbugs, there is no clear evidence, as far as I can ascertain, that bedbug bites can transmit disease. So I just want to reassure people that that's the case.
And I think the important thing you said before as well, they don't fly, do they?
No, they're flying.
So that's good.
They're just... Yeah, but they're you know, they're biting you. Then the next day they're biting someone else. So, yeah. So it's very, very important that you do check and break the cycle. They're hardy monsters, but they...
Is that a classification?
It truly is. They enjoy feeding, but just every few days. They don't eat every day.
Well, a bit like a supermodel, sort of, and just as irritating.
I'm just thinking of the mental image of a supermodel or a bedbug and compare and contrast. Well, I don't think so.
No, maybe not.
So they can actually, interestingly, they can go without a meal for up to a year, kind of like you, Nigel.
Absolutely. I'm struggling with every few days, I tell you.
And they're so robust, they can endure extreme cold down to minus 26 Fahrenheit or minus 31 Celsius. Now, I'm not recommending you do this, but you can actually put them inside a bag in a domestic freezer, right?
As you do.
And leave them there for months, right? Right. They will desiccate. They will go into a sort of a long sleep. You can then take them out, rehydrate them with a little bit of water, and they're up and about. They're fine.
It's good to have a hobby, isn't it?
And at the other end of the spectrum, they are fine up to 115 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 46 degrees Celsius.
That's incredibly precise. I'm just imagining this experiment, you know, with a series of bedbugs, and they're gradually turning up the temperature until at 115 they go poof. That must be hugely satisfying, isn't it? Hugely satisfying.
Well, we're actually both very compassionate men, right?
Well, yeah, here we are. You say that.
Bed bugs, popping bed bugs.
Well, they're certainly hardy little buggers, aren't they?
They really are. They're incredible. They can live in an environment of pure carbon dioxide or pure nitrogen.
You don't think they're trying to take the world over here quietly, do you? Know?
Well, and this is
give another couple hundred thousand years.
This is our fault, basically, because I mentioned DDT earlier. They were exposed, right? And gradually, through natural selection, some were resistant to DDT. And that trait then developed and developed and developed. You now have these bed bugs. You can't heat them. You can't freeze them. You can't kill them with pesticides. So, yeah, problem. Yeah, you were going
to
say
something. We're just going to have to learn to live with them. Now, I was just thinking, you know, I like musical references, and that just came to me. So just tell me a song where there's a reference to DDT. There you go. Put you on the spot.
Jeez.
I know. I won't leave you addressing. Joni Mitchell.
Joni Mitchell?
Yeah. Yellow Taxi. Yeah. Give us spots on our apples. No, give us spots on our apples, but leave us... No. Spots on our apples, something to do with DDT. Anyway, don't worry about it. It's just a sign.
I think we're going to have
to. Yeah, we might have to edit that one.
I think we're going to have to fact check that. And actually, you know, talking about passing on their genetic traits, their mating habits kind of sound like a horror movie. Basically, what happens is that the males inseminate the female by piercing their abdomen, which is hardly romantic.
Oh, that's a hell of a night out, isn't it? That reminds. Oh, no, maybe not.
So, given the background of everything we've discussed, the best treatment, if you will, for bed bug bites is don't get them. Prevention, right? Best treatment is prevention. So first of all, prior to booking into a hotel anywhere, check internet sites that report bed bug incidents. Bedbugreports.com was one that I found. And other advisory sites. Put in the name of the hotel and bed bugs into your favorite search engine. So you can check up on online and look about that. The second thing is some hotels have bed bug. You know, it's really difficult to say. It's bed bug. Bed
Honestly,
bug,
I'm bed. Really enjoying seeing you struggle. Honestly, it's a joy.
That's vicious. So many, many hotels have bed bug eradication protocols. They use dogs now to sniff them out. Really?
They leave fleas in the room, do they?
It's an exchange program.
Wasn't there a song about a woman who swallows a fly? I can see where this is.
Some lady swallowed a fly. I don't know what she is.
It ended badly, yeah.
And they say that these creatures have an aroma like cilantro. And in the United States...
Well, that would get rid of the mosquitoes, wouldn't it? Because isn't that what they use, cilantro, to get rid of mosquitoes? You have candles that burn...
Citronella. Oh. That's citronella, you idiot.
No.
It's citronella.
Well, it
lemon.
Begins with a C.
It's not close enough. So The other insect that's said to smell like cilantro are American stink bugs, which I think originally came from the Far East. And these things were impossible to eradicate. And they swarmed in America. Awful. And if you tread on them or whack them, they release a smell. It's a chemical signal.
I remember coming to stay with you in the States, and you used to have them there, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
In your, wherever it was, in the Rocky Mountain Ridge or wherever it was.
Virginia.
The Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia.
On the trail of the Lonesome Pine.
That's the one. Yeah, I remember seeing it as we went past. And it was, but they were everywhere, weren't they?
Yeah.
And they came through. And I remember, listeners, this is boring, but I remember getting up one morning and going to make myself a cup of tea and putting some water in the kettle. And then when I poured the hot water out, there was a stink bug floating in the top of my tea, because they got absolutely everywhere. But if you didn't touch them, they never saw them move.
Yeah.
They were just there, weren't they?
Yeah.
Absolutely bizarre.
They get through anything. You know, this house had amazingly well-sealed windows, and they would appear. I had no idea. No. It's almost like they're dematerialized or beamed up,
yeah,
or something hideous.
And the bed bugs you had there were terrible, weren't they?
So I've mentioned again, check online before you go to a hotel. When you come to the hotel, don't use soft bags, use hard-sided cases. Put your clothes in individual plastic, sealable plastic bags. Put them on a hard surface. And because they're nocturnal, you need a darkened room to find them. So close the curtains.
You could sleep during the day. Go out at night. That'll fool them. Absolutely. They're going, where do they go?
That's an interesting concept, Nigel, but no, we're not going to recommend
that. I think it's flawed.
I think it's deeply flawed. So you close the curtains, peel back the bedclothes, and use your phone with a flashlight and have a look for the bugs, discarded skins, bloodstains on the mattress, poop, bed bug poop.
Bed bug poop. Old are you? 5.
Oh, God. And once you've made sure that the room is fine, then you can unpack. If you do have the misfortune of picking them up and taking them home, insecticides are a waste of time, right? And also you should look online, because there's been incidents in movie theaters of people picking them up in movie theaters.
You can see that, yeah.
Dorms, dormitories, and halls of residence for university, libraries, nowhere seems to be immune from this. If you are at a hotel and you're bitten, try and find evidence that it's there so you can show the hotel management and you can reassure yourself what the problem is. And you should inform the authorities, because this is a reportable event. And, you know, what I did in the hotel, because they basically didn't believe this was happening.
Or want to believe it.
So I emptied a shampoo container. You know, they give the little amenities, they call
them.
And I captured a few of these little critters. And why are you laughing?
Did you name them?
I didn't name them.
You say, who are you going to do a little poop? Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, if we could stay serious for a second, as soon as possible, you should have a shower, hot shower, somewhere free of bugs, and ideally put on, seal the clothes you were wearing in a sealable plastic bag and wear clean clothes. And the moment you get home, dispose of everything, you know, leave it outside until it can be treated. And when you come home, you know, you may be greeted by family members or pets, and you should...
Pets. I have cats. They're not going to enthusiastically greet me, are they?
Well, no, probably
not. Or the family, for that matter.
Or your family, for that matter. So once you discover that you've got bed bugs in your dwelling, you better get professional help, right? They should be vacuumed as much as possible. I've said that pesticides that you can buy as a consumer a waste of time. You need professional help. They may use heat treatment, which is sometimes even burning mattresses or soft furnishings or clothes. And yeah, it can be a major, major issue for a home.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because if it truly is expanding, it's a significant worry, isn't it? And the ability to actually get it under control is a hell of a task, isn't it?
Yeah,
public health task. So yeah, I know my sister and my niece, I mean, they burnt stuff, got rid of it, sealed it off. You're right, absolutely all of those things. They did get rid of them. They did eradicate them. I guess it sounds like we're asking people to do a lot. It sounds like, you know, it's almost inconceivable that everybody would do that. But you've just got to make some inroads into it, haven't you?
Yeah,
you're certainly making me think.
Well, again, prevention, prevention, prevention. And by the way, the pesticides that do nothing for the bed bugs do knock off things like spiders and other critters that eat bed bugs. So you're actually making it worse. Now, the internet, as we know, is a dark tunnel that you can go down and find all sorts of stuff. And one of the things I found as a recommendation was diatomaceous earth.
What? Diatomaceous earth.
Yeah.
Let's unpack that. Is that diatom something?
Yeah. They're diatoms. They're ancient.
Diatom?
Little tiny critters. And it's like...
Are they really two atoms? They are tiny, though, aren't they?
They're dinky little things. So they're basically silicates. They're silicates. They're made of silicon. So it's known as dinosaur dust as well. That's really...
Isn't it known as sand?
Well, it is, yes. So it's a form of sand, and people maintain that because the tiny little bits of silicate can pierce the bed bugs.
Oh, and they think they got pregnant that way. Or am I confusing two things?
You're confusing two things. So it does work. It does kill bed bugs, and you can treat mattresses and things with it. However, there's a bit of a problem, because as a human being, you can inhale diatomaceous earth, and these little bits of silicate deposit deep in your lungs and can form an inflammatory condition in your lungs that can actually be really very serious. Silicosis.
I was going to say silicosis.
Really nasty. Yeah. So don't go out and buy dinosaur dust and try and treat your home. Not a good idea.
Okay, I won't.
Additionally, people talk about getting peat, P-E-A-T, peat, you know, which is like a precursor to coal, if you will. They use it to make whiskey, but people talk about burning peat and using the peat smoke to infuse your house and get rid of bed bugs.
Is that Pete Fires?
Pete Fires,
yes. I went to school with him.
Oh, God. Oh, dear.
Meanwhile.
Then there's all sorts of stuff on the internet about various plants and herbs to deter them. As far as I can ascertain, they don't do anything.
Is that herbs you use to get rid of the itching? You know, like, I don't know, there might be cannabinoids or those sort of things. You're not recommending that, are you?
What, recommending cannabis?
Yeah.
I don't think bedbugs smoke cannabis.
Well, they'd be far more relaxed, wouldn't they?
They would be.
Well, they'd make them hungry, though, wouldn't they?
I guess they would. They'd have the munchies. Exactly.
Okay. So, I fancy meat and some chocolate.
So, no, cannabinoids, as far as I know, have never been suggested. Mind you, if you're very itchy, they would probably help.
Well, I was thinking that.
There was a French naturalist I came across, Jean-Étienne Guittard. I'm probably not pronouncing that properly. He recommended bed bugs to treat hysteria, and a bunch of other odd medicinal uses have been proposed on the internet, as far as I can see.
Yeah, John, they're more likely to cause hysteria, I thought. Anyway, as a music lover, I found this great closer for us. In 1996, the Matthew Scholar Band, I really need to get out more, recorded Bad Bedbugs on their Bone to Pick With You album. So here we go. I'm not going to sing this. These are the words. Bad bedbugs, don't care who you are. A nobody or a movie star. Oh, I think I'm feeling a tune coming on. Bugs over there. Bugs over here. Bad bedbugs are everywhere. Bad bed bugs, bad bed bugs, Lord, bad bed bugs. When you go to bed tonight, don't let the bed bugs bite. So there, thanks for being here to join the docs.
So thanks for that, Nigel. I'm glad you didn't sing it, but I'm surely going to look that up, Matthew Scholar Band. So if you've enjoyed Join the Docs, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, tell your friends, visit our website at jointhedocs.com. And get all sorts of additional material and great merch featuring the work of our goofy artist, Robin Gott.
And if you want to reach out to ask a question or suggest a topic, please use our social media at Join the Docs. And if you want to reach out to tell us we're rubbish, please don't.
So until next time, everyone, please stay happy, stay healthy, because it beats the alternative. Remember, we spend a long time dead, so sleep tight, don't let the bed bugs bite. Bye for now.
Bye.
We are grateful for you listening to Join the Docs. This is the legal stuff now that we have to say. The views and opinions expressed on Join the Docs are those of Dr. Nigel Guest, myself, Jonathan Sakia, and other people on our show, but please be aware that Join the Docs is not intended to be medical advice. It's for information and entertainment only. Please
Always take any health concerns to your doctor or other healthcare provider. We respect the privacy of patients and never identify individuals unless they've consented. We may change details, dates, place names, and so on to protect privacy. Listening to Join the Docs, interacting on our social media, emailing or writing does not establish a doctor-patient relationship. Phew, well, I'm glad that's out the way. Please, everyone, be safe and well.